You have entered the Arcade Cafe. Today, I'm appropriately finishing up a latte on this rainy day. I am your host, Bryce Yoli, and I'm here with my pal and cousin-in-law and more eloquent co-host, Caleb James. And I'm seeing stars right now for some reason, so I might pass out during this episode.
That'd be fun. That'd be something different. I'll take over if you pass out.
Yeah, just keep talking while I'm having a seizure over here. So
and like, now we're talking about butts.
Yeah. Here in the Arcade Cafe lies a short story size answer. A short story sized answer to those full length episodes of the main feature of Arcade Bookshop at only about 30 minutes in length. Sometimes less if we're really good, but usually we're not. We bring you our current thoughts on our video game progress, our book progress, a little bit of video game news that is probably already a little old, occasional state of the podcast info, our wants, our needs, our private thoughts, our deepest, darkest secrets, and of course, the sweet nothings that Caleb whispers in the bedroom. Let's get down to business.
Mm-hmm.
Thought we'd start with some gaming news. I was looking at a video that had it showed a bunch of the games that are coming out this month. There's a couple of really cool ones, mostly just little things that marginal games that most people won't hear about, but there was one that stuck out to me. It looked really cool, actually, that you and Spencer might be interested in. Can I talk today? It's called Sandland, and it's inspired by the Akira Toriyama manga, and it looks awesome. It has like the illustrations that look just like, you know, like Dragon Ball and like Chrono Trigger kind of. But it's like, I think the characters are, it looks sort of like cel shading, like comic shading.
Right.
Like how Borderlands is. But it looks, the world looks really cool. I didn't look deep into it, but the video that was playing in the video I was watching, it looks pretty awesome.
What's this gonna be on?
I think.
It looks cool.
I think it's on consoles.
You can get it on Steam.
I don't know if it's exclusive to anything.
Yeah, it's definitely got like it's got the Dragon Ball art style, but it's a little more, I guess, kid, like cartoony. Say more cartoony. Yeah. It looks cool.
Yeah, I think it looks awesome.
I never heard of Sandland.
I haven't either, but it looks really cool. I think it'd be looks like an adventure game, but it looks solid. So I'm going to look more into that, and actually maybe we'll talk more about it next week or something, or whenever it comes out. Another thing. I got this news from Kotaku, the website. The majority of video game playtime in 2023, turns out it was mostly from games 6 years or older. And I thought that was interesting because 2023 had like, people argue that it is potentially the best year in gaming history because so many huge things came out. Like, Spider-Man 2, Super Mario RPG, I think Hogwarts Legacy came out last year, Modern Warfare 3, it's not a fantastic game, but it was a big game. Starfield, so many things came out last year that we've been waiting on forever. So it's kind of shocking that most of the playtime last year was for older games. Now, it is interesting, but that also doesn't necessarily mean that they're playing old classic games. That just means that they're at least 6 years old. Most of the playtime is actually going to games like Fortnite and Roblox and like older Call of Duty games, things like that. So if you think about it, which they kind of commented on this in the Kotaku article, it sort of starts to spell trouble for developers because how can they compete with the new games they're trying to sell for like $70 that they put out every couple of years if these live service games are put out for free and updated all the time and they profit off of microtransactions all the time. So, you know, they're free overall. And I play some of those. I mean, not all the time, but I have played some of those. Yeah, that's just shocking to me.
I'm not shocked. I mean, the state of the economy, like the way that nobody can afford to live.
That part I'm
not shocked
about.
I can't really buy new video games.
No, that part I'm not shocked about. I think it's just the fact that there were so many good things that came out last year, and I'm curious how they actually measured that, because I mean, some of those games, oh, like Baldur's Gate 3, some of those games are like that game, that one in particular, Baldur's Gate is like 300 plus hours. I can't imagine how, I don't know. But then I also heard something about how, I forget where I heard this, about how a lot of the people who are playing Baldur's Gate 3 have only played it for like 12 hours.
So basically didn't play the game.
Yeah, so I don't really understand how that works.
That can't even get you past the intro, probably.
Oh, no, that game is so, I mean, you could probably design your character for like 2 hours. But yeah, interesting to think about. I mean, the other game, Starfield's a long game. I think people were playing that. I know it wasn't spectacular, but anyway, interesting little tidbit. Do you have anything before I go on?
I did, and I can't remember what it was, and I was looking for it, but I can't find it. When you look up video game news, it's like might as well be in a different language at this point. I have no idea what any of that stuff was. I was just reading.
Yeah, it was today in particular. I've been busy, and I had absolutely nothing to talk about halfway through the day, and I just Googled a bunch of stuff and found some interesting things. But Caleb and I don't hyperfixate on news. I think we're both more focused on ourselves and creating before, you know, we prioritize creativity before consumption, which mm-hmm. I try to live by that. So that's why I always say in the intro that this video game news is potentially already a little old, because I don't really pay attention, but when I do look into it, I like to talk about it because it's interesting. If it's interesting.
Most of the time when we come across news that's interesting, it's something that I'm not going to play anyway. Or if I do, it would be way in the future. Even if it's something I would like a new Grand Theft Auto, you know, oh, here's a new trailer for it and stuff. And it's like, I'll watch it, but I probably will never play the game. Or if I do, it's going to be way, way down the line just because I don't have the time for that stuff anymore.
I know. It's so frustrating. I'm honestly still like not done, because there was a DLC that went with Final Fantasy VII Remake. I'm almost done with it finally, but I've been like, it's fun, but I've been taking more time on it than I wish I was.
You don't say.
I agree with you. I'm tired of talking about it. but yeah, like these games just take so long, and that game isn't even that long compared to a lot of other ones. So
you figure though, a lot of the people that are actual gamers or hardcore gamers, that's what their hobby is or their output is. Like, that's what they do. We are writers, so that comes first and foremost. That doesn't leave a lot of time to have something that's going to be a huge chunk of your day spent doing. So it's like, hey, do you want to watch movies, TV, read books, write, and play video games? Well, you can maybe do two if you're really good at your time and ignore your wife, maybe three of those things during the week, but you can't do them all.
Yeah. Having a relationship is a large factor in this, especially maintaining a podcast where we do both of those things.
Yes.
It becomes a challenge. It does. But I still have two more things in gaming news. So they aren't a sponsor, and I don't think anyone will ever sponsor us. but if you want to, I'm here to accept your sponsorship. But Game Informer,
that's talking to you, Fleshlight.
Game Informer is starting to encourage people to buy their print magazine subscription more. I didn't even know that anyone was still printing gaming magazines.
What's the point? Other than the nostalgia factor, why?
I don't know. I think it's part of,
maybe
sales. But I think it's part of things that people want. Like, there's more nostalgia. There's more like a craving for nostalgia now more than ever, I think.
Don't get me wrong, if I was an avid gamer that I could do this all the time, I would get something like that because I would enjoy that. But at the same time, I feel like you can look up everything you need online for free, not pay anything.
Yeah, I agree. But also, I think it goes along with how frustrated people are. Not everybody, but a lot of people are frustrated with the fact that there's such a hard lean into gaming being digital only in the future, in the near future. And some games are doing that. I mean, I don't know a lot, but I know that Alan Wake so far has only been digital.
I think that's horse hockey. I don't like it.
I do too, because I didn't see a problem with it when I first started thinking about it. But I think, first of all, when you have a digital game, you don't own it.
No.
Like, if they, it's just
they
like,
just gone. It could be gone.
Same with like buying movies on Prime or whatever. If they feel like taking it off, you don't own it anymore, and you spent $20 or whatever. And with a game, it's like $70. So that's terrible. And not only that, but if it's only digital, you can't share it with friends, which I understand they don't want you to because of money, but you also don't have a collection and you don't have any nostalgia down the line. It's valueless. It's worthless.
They can change it whenever they want. So you brought up movies and TV shows. There's a lot of shows where they found that something, an old episode was considered offensive in the modern light. So either they take the episode off or they edit the episode and put it back up. And then you never get the original episode unless you bought the actual physical DVD set.
Yeah, it's jacked up. It's like the stuff they do to, well, I mean, I don't know if it's still a conspiracy theory or not, but what they do to Disney movies. Have you seen that? Where they like a guy said that he was paid to add chemtrails in the back and in the sky in certain Disney movies.
Why? Out of all the things, why chemtrails?
So that people think they were always there and they don't question it as much.
You think that's the real source of the Mandela effect, where it's like, no, this thing that when I was a kid, I know for a fact was real, but then everyone looks for it now and there's no sort, like, oh, the fruit of the loom, it didn't have a cornucopia, actually. We all thought it did, but the logo was just fruit. Never had the cornucopia. It's just a Mandela effect. Or do you think they actually just go back and say, nah, I'm taking that out? Who's going to know?
Yeah, well, actually, that, I don't know if I already told you, but the cornucopia thing has sort of been proven that they tried to cover it up.
Confuse
us.
Big fruit of the loom.
Yeah, this girl was, I heard this on a different podcast. This girl was like freaking out because she was confident that she has seen the actual basket in the illustration of the cornucopia. And everyone was like, no, it's never been there. And Fruit of the Loom says it's never been there. And they even showed like their patent or whatever the word is for all their images. And it's not there. But eventually, through like having her friends look through their clothes and like going on the internet and stuff, eventually,
listen,
someone
Bryce,
finally
I'm gonna
found
stop
a shirt.
Right there. No, just quit it. Just quit it. It's easier to fake the one shirt than it is to fake all the other stuff of it not existing. For instance, all these images on,
dude, I have that in my brain too, though. I have that. I remember it.
Do you remember? Go in your closet and find that shirt then. I want proof.
I bet my mom could find one in my
I don't want some random lady on the internet going, ooh, look, there's a cornucopia that I printed yesterday. Fuck that lady. I want you, Bryce, to tell your mom to bring you that shirt now. Or old underpants.
Do you not remember what it looks like? Because I remember exactly what it looks like.
Oh, I remember what it looks like. I just don't know if I trust my memory.
Well, I trust my memory before I trust
big corporate
yeah, telling me that I'm wrong. Yeah. So I don't know. I you know, who knows? But I think they F with us.
And I think they did. I think that cornucopia definitely existed because it doesn't even look right without it. Like this right. Logo without the cornucopia that people see, it's looks like shit.
Yeah,
the Berenstain thing, I could understand that maybe that's like a real like Mandela effect, but a lot of these I think are actual hog shit. Like I think these companies just for whatever reason change the logo and do the copyright stuff. They're just like, well, no, we can't admit that there was a different logo. They just won't refuse.
Or the real conspiracy theory view is that the government is doing it to test how well they can F with our minds in like little tiny ways so they can gradually do bigger things.
Or more likely, the people at Fruit of the Loom were like, hey, this is a quick way to get free advertising. Let's just say the cornucopia never existed, and now everyone's looking at Fruit of the Loom and talking about it.
This really escaped my grasp here, but this got out of hand. So we were talking about Game Informer printing a magazine.
Why? Why?
Anyway, I just think it would be apparently they've been doing it. I think they're just wanting to do it more, and I think it's cool. It'd be cool if there's just something like more romantic about having physical things, just like we want physical print copies of our literary magazines.
I want fucking magazines to come back with actual fiction stories and stuff in them, like Playboy, but not just nudie images. Like, they had good stories. Like, I want that to come back.
Mm-hmm.
But it won't.
It could. You never know.
Maybe if we have a solar flare and it gets rid of the internet for a little bit.
Yeah, and you never know if it'll come. Like, maybe they'll figure out a way to print without it being, you know, quote unquote, harmful to the environment and having to use trees to print on paper.
Give a shit about the environment. They never did.
They just
don't want to spend money. They just want to get as much money as possible without spending money.
I'm just advocating for anybody who's thinking in that in those terms. But
they're recyclable. They're paper. It's made of paper. You can recycle paper.
All right, agreed. But also in terms of physical things being better, I recently bought an actual chessboard and took it into the office to play with my coworker. So we sat it at in an empty cube on the desk. So whenever we're just taking a break or we have free time, we just go over and make moves. And it's so much better. It's just so much better. And I play better too. I beat him twice in a row for the first time since we've started playing, but only on the physical board.
Mm.
I think I still suck on the app. But
there's something weird about being able to see the moves highlighted on the app. Like, you know, if you click on a piece, it'll show you where you're able to move. And that just kind of, I think sometimes I feel like that actually makes you make the wrong move because you see things that you normally wouldn't see because it's probably a bad move. But you're like, oh, here's all the things. Oh, I could connect this and that. And it just fucks you up versus going with your instinct.
It's distracting. And because it's less physical, I think your mind makes that, like, subconsciously makes that connection like it's not really real, and then you just make haphazard moves on the go and you don't fucking think about what you're doing and you lose.
Exactly.
I even beat him without I lost my queen at one point and I still beat him, which I rarely am able to do that. So I felt good. My last bit of gaming news, I think you might be interested in this, I'm not sure, but they're remaking Silent Hill 2. Did you play Silent Hill?
Yes, I did a long time ago.
Yeah, so I'm excited for that. And it's supposed to come out this year. We don't know exactly when, but it just received its ESRB rating of M. So it's on the way. And it looks pretty cool. So we'll be looking out for that. I thought there wasn't really anything coming out this year, but there's already been a few things. So it might be another... not as good as last year, but it might be another decent year. So that's our gaming coverage for the day. I hope y'all enjoyed that. Yeah. Moving on to writing and reading. Do you think that we will ever have like actual book news? Like new
like
things that are
books?
Coming out?
No, no, never.
Yeah. It's funny. As we always talk about like what's new in gaming, and then we're like, I've been reading this book that's 100 years old.
Richard Chismar's got some great deals going on over at Cemetery Dan's.
Oh, yeah?
He has these $100 bundles that he's only charging $50 for. Let me bring up the email. I really had no interest in getting any of the stuff, but just for the fact that it was, what do you get? You get a trade hardcover, a trade paperback, a back issue of Cemetery Dance magazine, and a chapbook, plus an out-of-print signed limited edition hardcover, all for $50.
Does he run that?
That's his thing. I don't know if he like is in charge of it anymore, but yeah, he started it.
I didn't know that.
But that would be fucking awesome to get all that stuff. I might still do that. It's actually a good deal. I don't know what book you get.
How much was it?
$50 plus shipping, which is like another 11. But even so, like, that's a good bit of stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Especially when the magazine itself, you go on Amazon and get an old issue for like $12 or something. So,
how long has that been around? I'm pretty sure I've known of that for a while.
Cemetery Dance since the late 80s when he created it in his garage.
Wow. That's awesome. I never knew that's, like you talked about him on DPW and stuff. I never knew that's what he did. What are you reading now that you finished Don Quixote?
I have been working my way through the Sailor Steve Costigan stories by Robert E. Howard. They're a lot of fun, bit racist, a lot of racist, very racist, kind of racist, and there's lots of punching, mostly punching.
Fascinating.
I'm enjoying them because they're so stupid that I don't have to think, and it's really nice after reading the Divine Comedy to not think about what I'm reading.
So you're saying it's filled with literary merit?
Sure is.
Wonderful.
I wish I had it down here. I'd read an excerpt because it is brilliant.
I like a good literary boxing book.
Yeah, sure.
Just rolling around, punching.
There's a lot of heart punches, like 10 heart punches per story.
Heart punches?
Yeah, always punching people in the heart. He's like, so far, I'm on like the fourth or fifth story, and I think he's had his ear punched off like 8 times.
Ear punched off?
He gets his ear punched and it like comes half off.
And they keep reattaching it.
Yeah, I guess.
They're just...
He's had all his eyes and his lips, and he's splattering blood, and everything swelled, and ribs broken. Guy should have been dead after the first fight, let alone all the other fights.
Jesus.
It's fun.
I've never read anything like that.
It's old pulp stuff. It's fun. So, like I said, it's nice to just turn off your brain sometime and read stuff like that. There's a couple other. I thought about either reading Othello or maybe just diving into the Paradise Lost while I'm reading these stories. So maybe I'll start that like this weekend or something. But there's a writer, Paul Jameson. I read his book last year, Life of Maggot. And I really liked it because it was so different from anything I've ever read. And he actually had a book before that called Nightjar, and I bought that, and it's been sitting on my shelf. So I might read that too. I'm not sure. It's a lot like Lee's Life of Maggot was written in a medieval post-apocalyptic style with Celtic origins. You can't really imagine how it's written, but it's really cool. Like, I really was digging it.
Very involved.
Yeah.
I can't even, I couldn't read Paradise Lost right now. Next time I read something remotely like epic poetry or whatever, after reading the Divine Comedy, I have no idea when that will be because that was fucking miserable.
We still got to do an episode on that.
Yeah. Well, that's on you. Just let me know. But
it's hard to want to do that, you know?
I know.
It's like diving right back into the whorehouse that you escaped from.
But I don't know how you would read Paradise Lost right now. I saw that at Barnes and Noble the other day, and I was like, ugh, that looks thick.
It looks dense. More difficult than the Divine Comedy, that's for sure.
Yeah, like, why would you want to do difficult. That to yourself right now? I would give myself like a year.
At least it's written in English,
I guess.
I don't know. Like I said, I might just go with Shakespeare just for something short, but
yeah, Othello's good.
I don't know. I'm going to keep reading these Robert E. Howard stories. My problem is because this year my original plan was to go full pulp and read a bunch of pulp stuff and old sci-fi, but I didn't finish my last year's reading goal yet. I still have Paradise Lost and Ulysses to read, but I feel like that might take the whole year. So I don't want to just waste my year, you know?
Well, just update your goals to those two for this year, and then you're good. But we're at 25 minutes, so real quick, you want to talk about your new publications?
I don't remember. I mentioned the Dark Home Publishing last episode, right?
Yeah, I think so. You got this new one just the other day.
Yeah, I think I can announce it, because in the email he said he was going to announce it this week, I guess whoever got in. It is, I'm going to bring it up official. Mad Axe Media. This is the story I actually had to withdraw from Southwest Fiction, Southeast. I forget the name of it. It's a prestigious fucking magazine, but I think I told you off air. I was sitting there since 2022, and then when I finally withdrew the story from them, it said on the initial email when I initially submitted that they would get back to me within a week. They never got back to me.
Outrageous.
Yeah, so this is Mad Axe Media. The anthology is, you'll like the name of my story, by the way. So for the submission title, the friendly title, I only submitted this three times. One that I never, the one I withdrew, to this one, and then to As Alive Journal, which they said they were already full when I submitted. It's called The Haunted Pillow. But the actual title, the alternate title, is The House of Shit. And it's based on a very experience I had during coronavirus, where me and my buddy went to Virginia Beach, and everything was all not closed up, but it might as well have been. And we went to a haunted house, and literally the guy who worked there just kept walking through going, "This is the House of Shit." And it was terrible. So I based a story on that, and that got accepted to by Mad Axe Media for their Readings from Cursed Room 301 anthology. And the anthology is about, I guess, reinventing tropes, like horror tropes. And it's supposed to be, it's like a professor in a classroom is, I forget exactly how it goes. It was pretty intricate, but it's like a professor, and basically, I don't know if he's calling on students or something, but people have stories. So it's like a overall narration that goes, like, combines all the stories together. But like the tropes for my story, I had the story written for years, so I never did anything with it because the name was so stupid. I think I didn't know what to do with it, and the premise was kind of dumb, but it actually turned out to be a perfect take on not just the haunted house trope, which is what it is, but jump scares. Like how stupid jump scares can be. And that's like the main thing is you always think a jump scare is going to come, and it's so dumb and it never really does. And then when it does, it's the fucking stupidest thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I thought when I reread it, when I submitted it to that, I was like, oh, this is actually pretty good. It's stupid, but it's good. So
yeah,
I was surprised because I thought it was just dog shit originally.
Well, you're on a roll. So Caleb's doing well with his publications this year.
I seem to be getting one every week. How about you, Bryce? You be getting one every week?
Fuck off. Wow. I'm getting sick of this shit, and I don't want to mope about it, but I did start a short story for the first time in ages, and I'm feeling okay about it. I feel like it's coming out more natural than any short story I've ever tried my hand at before. So I'm hopeful that I could finish that in a day or two, and I can have something new to something different for once instead of just writing my typical poems and junk. So
yeah, do that. Fiction's way better.
I like doing both, so I want to do both, but that's all I'm going to talk about for myself today. But just a reminder, Arcade Bookshop will have a table this year at Three Rivers Comic Con in Pittsburgh the weekend of June 1st. So bare minimum, we'll have stickers for everybody who stops by.
Stickers.
And talks to me. I had big plans for a fun setup, but the cost of electricity at that convention is outrageous. So I decided to forego that, but maybe I'll have some like handheld systems or something for people to stop by and play a game with me while we talk about the podcast or something.
You better tie them to the table or they're going to steal them.
Yeah, we'll see. But if I even do that, but anyway, I'll have
shitty etch-a-sketch,
but I'll have stickers and it'll be, we can chat. So anything else, Caleb?
Let's see. No.
All right. I have other stuff, but I'll save everybody's time and save it for next time. So stay tuned this Monday, April 8th for another regular episode of Arcade Bookshop. It is the sister episode to our conversation about A Memoir of Blue, and we're discussing The Sound and the Fury by William Faulkner, and it is cool. Then after that, come on back next Friday for another episode of Arcade Cafe. Thank you everybody for listening. You've just spent some time in the Arcade Cafe, and we hope you enjoyed yourself. I'm Bryce Yoli with my pal and cousin-in-law, Caleb James, and we will see you next week.